And we're back here on Essential Music here on 101.9 WDET. I'm Ann DeLisi. And now I'd like to share with you an interview that I recorded recently with author Leo Early. He spent 12 years researching and writing a new book called The Grandy Ballroom, Detroit's Rock and Roll Palace. Here is part of that interview now. Leo, one of the things about this book that I loved was it talked about the music, of course. And when you think about the Grandy, everybody thinks about the music. But you took us back to how this building was built, the history of architecture in Detroit, the incredible amount of ballrooms that were actually built in our town that we are in some ways completely unaware of. So I wanted to ask you why you took this vantage point when you decided to write this book. What got you to the place of saying, okay, I'm going to start with the architecture and go way back in history as to how this venue came to be?
You know, it started in me writing about music at Grandy and being a musician and investigating that. And I was casually interested in Detroit architecture. Mm-hmm. But through my correspondence with people that went there, I learned about the architect. And I took it from there. I just started digging deeper and deeper into finding out more about Charles Agree. And everybody's heard about Albert Kahn in Detroit.
Of course.
But how many people really know about Charles Agree?
Yep.
And he was very, very important to Detroit architecture. So it then became a building book.
Right. So Charles Agree, he was putting up apartment buildings in Detroit at an incredible clip. Like, that is what he was doing. And your book lays that out, that he became, in his 20s, incredibly successful, churning out these apartment buildings in Detroit. And then along comes this project. Right?
Sure. I mean, he made a mint in apartment buildings in Detroit. But that's what Detroit needed at the time because it's an auto town. There's all these people coming into town. Where are they going to live? And where are they going to have quality housing? And that's where he came in, made that money. And then I think he kind of foresaw what was going to happen with the Depression. Mm-hmm. And he made a transition. And that transition was into movie theaters by way of his first movie theater, and a couple of ballrooms. Well, it was the Grandy first, and you know what I like to call it? Its sister ballroom, which was the Vanity at Newport and Jefferson on the east side. So they're very similar, and they were built a year apart.
And talking with Leo Early, the book is called The Grandy Ballroom, Detroit's Rock and Roll Palace. So let's get to the moving forward. I mean, the book covers the building of a lot of these movie palaces and the history and the movers and shakers. You even talk about the Purple Gang in here. We get into some very interesting territory as you talk about what Detroit was like back then. But now that we get specific to the Grandy Ballroom, and I mentioned to you when you walked in that it seemed like the Grandy was always kind of starting over. Like it would get different owners and it would get a different, they would try different things. And it originally people went there to dance.
Sure. Well, you know, that was like the social lubrication of the day. You know, I mean, back then, if you didn't know how to dance, you were sunk.
Yeah.
So the partners that ran the operation, the dance operation at the Grandy Ballroom, they were dance masters.
Right.
So it was very important to know how to dance.
Right.
And that was the attraction, that was the draw, always. You know, I guess to a certain degree, even in the rock era too, you know. Mm-hmm. You went there to socialize and dance. But by the time Gabe Glantz acquired the building in 1964, there was a couple things they tried that didn't quite work so well. You know, he still had retail tenants because, again, it's a retail building downstairs, dance floor upstairs. So he's ready to try something new. And he had already been positioned and had a number of venues himself already. You get this perfect storm of talent, Gabe Glantz for one, Russ Gibb for another.
And there you go. We should talk about Russ Gibb's importance. The Grandy Ballroom would not have become the rock and roll venue that it did without him. And he is so pivotal in Detroit's music history as well. So once Russ Gibb really got a hold of it, and Gabe Glantz let him sort of say, okay, I've got these ideas, we're going to give this a try. It wasn't an instant rock and roll venue success. This took some work. It took some time to build up a reputation, if you will, so that people wanted to go there. People needed to want to play there, and then for people to go see these performances.
Russ was really like a linchpin, mm-hmm. you know, for that. And once I got pulled out, you know, the dominoes kind of started to fall. And things fell into place for the venue. And he was well positioned ahead of a lot of other markets for doing that. Sure, Detroit had teen clubs, you know, right. the Hideout for one or the Fifth Dimension in Ann Arbor, but this was different. And Russ had been to California enough to know what was going on.
San Francisco, yeah. in particular.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and he tried to replicate that in Detroit, and you know, it was an easy sell, I think, to Gabe Glantz in leasing him that ballroom initially.
And then in comes John and Lenny Sinclair. They become part of this entire mix as well. And along with John Sinclair comes the MC5. And when I think of the Grandy Ballroom, I always think of the MC5 first because it was like their home. They were kind of like the house band in some ways, right?
Sure. Well, I think that was Russ's intent.
Right.
Was to have that original material. I was thinking in retrospect the other day about that is that, you know, ASCAP fees and performance fees.
Yeah.
I imagine that maybe that came into play. You know, he was operating on a shoestring budget to get that started, borrowing money from everybody he knew. And it was a perfect storm. And everybody just came together. And, you know, they call it that chapter, you know, the planets align with Gabe.
Right.
Gabe Glantz and Russ Gibb. And that's kind of what it was. It was a natural occurrence almost.
I'm talking with Leo Early about his new book called The Grandy Ballroom, Detroit's Rock and Roll Palace. So once things really got off the ground, the MC5 really got their footing there. But then it started to become a venue where artists that were internationally known wanted to play. And there was nothing like playing to a Detroit rock and roll audience either.
True. That's... I think how it became a important tour stop. I think early on, the agents that worked with Russ and Jeep Holland, who was a primary booker for Russ, sold those acts into Detroit and figured, well, we need kind of a Midwestern stop over here. We're going to try to build the market for these acts in the Midwest. So that was part of it too, but they encountered these Detroit audiences in the right type of format. I mean, the Who had been in Detroit before, mm-hmm. At the Fifth Dimension in Ann Arbor and Southfield High School. But they did other high schools throughout the country. And, you know, the response was okay, but they're high schools, you know, and mm-hmm. touring with Herman's Hermits wasn't for them. So when they finally came on a headliner tour and they hit that audience that had gotten an inkling of what they were about, heard the records, we're already familiar with them. It was an epiphany for them and really kind of kept them going. And they recommended it to their friends and they reported back to their agent. Yeah, this definitely book all the acts are going to follow us that you have in Detroit.
And one of the most incredible bills ever that took place at the Grandy Ballroom was Fleetwood Mac, The Who, and Pink Floyd.
Over a weekend stretch, yeah, yeah. So if you wanted to hang out all weekend, you could have seen all those bands.
So when you look back at the Grandy Ballroom and you look back at all the time it took to do this book, you spent 12 years working on this book, right? What did you learn? What was the most surprising thing that you learned about Detroit's history and the history of this particular venue?
Wow, that's a very good question. The number of people that came out of that era, especially the ones that are still with us today,
right?
That are creative people that became very successful, and also the number of entrepreneurs in business that became very successful, started or went to the Grandy Ballroom. It was a place that showed you what was possible. You know, it that era, that baby boomer generation, coming in off the back of the 50s, which is a very staid generation, very, you know, buttoned down, opening up into that 60s counterculture and the realm of possibilities. So I guess, you know, being a creative person myself, you know, I valued that. And I learned of all these people and what they gained from it. They learned that, yeah, you could do your own thing. John Sinclair was on the radio for a long time in New Orleans, and the big expression in New Orleans is "do what you wanna."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that, you know, kept chiming in my head. You know, it's that particular that rock era The people that were fortunate enough to go there at that time did what they wanted to.
And Russ Gibb was certainly one of those people. I mean, he was the catalyst for all of this and pushing it all forward. I'm talking with Leo Early. The book is called The Grandy Ballroom, Detroit's Rock and Roll Palace. It takes a vantage point of this particular venue that we haven't seen or heard before, from the architectural standpoint and other buildings that were being built at the same time, which I found absolutely fascinating, and what Detroit was really like. So you covered a lot of ground in this wonderful book. There is a book signing a week from today at Dearborn Music, in Dearborn, of course. And that's going to be a week from today on October 3rd, the official publication date. That's going to be a special day for you, I'm sure. And then there's an event that's already sold out on October 7th, the Grandy Ballroom History Tour, an excursion charter. That's going to be very cool. So you're going on the bus to the Grandy. Is that the story?
Yeah, we're going around Lincoln Park to all these MC5 significant sites and Dearborn sites with Russ Gibb and taking folks out for a pilgrimage.
What is this event on October 8th? The Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, the Grandy 50th Celebration.
That's going to be essentially a concert event. It's a day-long celebration.
Wonderful.
With two stages. The Yardbirds are going to be the headliner at the Michael Guido Theater there. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a fun time.
And October 15th, the Detroit Sound Conservancy's third annual music conference. And so you're going to be there talking about your book as well. Leo, congratulations on getting this done, of all your hard work paying off. It's a wonderful book.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you so much for having me.
And that is part of my conversation with author Leo Early about his new book, The Grandy Ballroom, Detroit's Rock and Roll Palace. And I thought, well, we couldn't really be talking about the Grandy Ballroom without playing the MC5. It's the MC5, of course, here on 101.9 WDET with Kick Out the Jams. Again, my congratulations to author Leo Early for spending so much time and effort to put together a wonderful new book called The Grandy Ballroom, Detroit's Rock and Roll Palace. Coming up next, we've got new music from Sylvan Esso, Lake Street Dive. We'll go back a few years to Arcade Fire, and we'll get to brand new music from The Pretenders next here on 101.9 WDET.